sick and tired of hearing things from uptight, short-sighted, narrow-minded hypocrites. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth. I've had enough of reading things by neurotic, psychotic, pig-headed politicians. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl.
The show you're about to hear was originally aired in January of 2016. And here it is. On Wednesday, December 30th, I heard part of a Where We Live show on NPR. And during part of the show, the guests were talking about conspiracy theorists as if they were all nutcases. And it didn't matter the issue. Several, quote, conspiracies were discussed, 9/11 being one of them. And they referred to conspiracy theorists as, quote, horrible trolls, and said that the facts didn't matter to these horrible trolls. And Colin McEnroe, who was a guest on the show, even made the misinformed statement that the 9/11 Commission report was a complete and thorough report, which even the 9/11 commissioners themselves have said isn't the case. So according to the esteemed guests on this NPR show, the following two former FBI agents that you're about to hear would be, quote, horrible trolls, conspiracy theorists, who just won't accept the facts. The first one is a former FBI agent. He introduces himself well at the beginning of it. So let's hear his take on 9/11.
I'm Ted L. Gunderson, a 27-year veteran of the FBI who retired in March of 1979. At the time of my retirement, I was the senior special agent in charge of the FBI Los Angeles Division, with more than 700 personnel under my command and a budget of $22.5 million. I was an agent on the street for 9.5 years, and then I advanced administratively. I was a supervisor, and then I was number two man in Connecticut and Philadelphia, and assistant special agent in charge was the title. And then I became a chief inspector, and then I was agent in charge in Memphis, Dallas, and the senior special agent in charge in Los Angeles, because I had three other special agents in charge under me and 24 supervisors under them. I have information chiseled in stone, documented that the FBI had advanced knowledge about 911 and did nothing to prevent this from occurring. And this is atrocious. It's unbelievable, having been a former FBI agent myself. And it's very obvious that this whole thing is being orchestrated by the powers that be at the highest level of our government. And I want the world to know about it. The minute I saw the planes fly in to the tower on television, live as a matter of fact, the question I had in my mind was, there is no way, absolutely no way, that somebody could skyjack four planes, 20 people skyjack four planes, in this case 19 individuals, and our government would not know about it in advance. We have, the U.S. government, the most advanced intelligence techniques of anybody in the world. And you'll never convince me we didn't have advanced knowledge about what was going on. We saw the airplanes go in, and it's also a question about whether they're remotely controlled. I don't know about that. I hate to comment on something that where I have no documentation, but there's much more to this story than has come out so far. You'll never in a million years convince me that those buildings, those towers, collapsed because those planes hit them. I'm confident that they were imploded. As a matter of fact, there were seismograph readings, they think from the basement, two of them, about the time that the buildings collapsed. There were also molten steel that was in the basement, which is a very high temperature for melting steel. And those planes hit above the 80th floor, so there's no way that that airplane fuel could have dropped down that low. Also, there were fires that burned in the basement for some 100 days afterwards. So there's some implication. There's some finagling. There's some maneuvering. As far as I'm concerned, and there are many, many more people involved in this than these so-called skyjackers and terrorists. The anti-terrorism legislation was written back in the middle 1980s under the George Bush Sr. administration. A female Department of Justice attorney, who was one of the authors, made the statement publicly, before this passes Congress, people have to be killed. Now, if we fast forward to a World Trade Center car bombing in February 1993, at that time, the FBI had a 43-year-old former Egyptian army officer as an informant who was in with the terrorists. He was commissioned by the terrorists to put the bomb together. He went to his FBI superiors, we're going to use a dummy bomb, right? And they said, no, we're going to use a real bomb. So the FBI not only knew in advance that they were going to bomb the World Trade Center, they furnished the ingredients for the bomb, which is absolutely unbelievable that they get away with this. What's unbelievable about it is this was actually printed in the New York Times on October 28, 1993. But they got away with it. And if I was a congressman or senator, I would demand an investigation. Why would the FBI furnish the ingredients for the bomb that brought down or that had damaged the World Trade Center in February 1993? We had six people killed there. We had 1,000 people injured. We had a total of six citizens who died in the February 1993 World Trade Center car bombing. We had 1,000 individuals who were injured. We had $500,000 in damage. But there weren't enough people who died to pass the anti-terrorism legislation. So now we fast forward to April the 19th, 1995, Oklahoma City bombing. We had 169 people who died, probably 169 because there was one leg they never did identify. And a year later, the anti-terrorism legislation passed. Now, it wasn't tough enough. I can't prove that there were explosives that were placed in the World Trade Center in the 911 situation. However, from what I've seen, an expert on implosions from Albuquerque, New Mexico, who worked for the government as under government contract, stated immediately afterwards that the buildings were imploded. And then he retracted his statement and said, well, maybe they were, maybe they weren't. But basically, now he's saying that they weren't imploded. But other experts who have looked at the pictures say that the buildings were imploded. I think that in order to implode those buildings, there had to be implications, government implications or involvement in placing these charges. I mean, that was a tremendous project. I mean, I don't know how many people would be involved in that. Going back to Oklahoma City, an inside investigator told me there were at least 11 other people involved in the Oklahoma City bombing. Now, if you have 11 other people involved in Oklahoma City, you're going to have three or four times that involved in the World Trade Center situation.
So that was former FBI agent Ted Gunderson. To learn more about the Oklahoma City bombing that he mentioned, check out the film A Noble Lie. I think you can get it on YouTube. And yes, there's lots of evidence to support that that was also a staged event and is being covered up. But don't take my word for it. Please do your own research. I was really shocked when I first realized that the Oklahoma City bombing was not what I had been told it was by our government and media. And trust me, you're not going to hear about it on NPR. And now we're going to listen to a former FBI translator, author, journalist, and whistleblower, Sibel Edmonds, talking about who created Al-Qaeda and ISIS. Sibel Edmonds has been gagged by the U.S. government, and she's written a couple of books to get her story out. One is called Classified Woman, and the more recent one is called Gladio B., which I highly recommend. What you're about to hear is from an interview on the show Sophie and Co. on RT, with Sophie Shevardnadze doing the interview. So here it is.
The sweeping wave of the ISIS advance came out of a clear blue sky, with American drones and satellites caught napping. How was it missed by the omnipresent eye of U.S. intelligence? How far will the West now go to combat it? And is the terror onslaught too strong to contain?
Former FBI whistleblower, author Sibel Edmonds is my guest today. Sibel, it's really great to have you on our show. So when asked if the rise of ISIS was a surprise, Obama admitted the intelligence community underestimated ISIS in Syria. Did it not see it coming in Syria or Iraq?
Well, the answer depends on if you want to take President Obama or the U.S. authorities and their words and evaluate based on that. I think where the rise of ISIS is mainly about a brand change. Sometimes as it happens in marketing, we get to see exactly the same principle within the geopolitical games that have been in play for a while now, especially since the end of the Cold War. And the Al-Qaeda brand began wearing off. And that brand now has been changed to ISIS, and as always, by design. And considering the fact that we cultivated and put together and financed and created the ISIS, for me, it goes into one of those caricature or the funny statements that are put out by the mainstream media, statements issued by people like Obama or anybody from the State Department.
So what you're saying basically is it was expected for ISIS to turn into something so powerful, into a powerful group, but they're just not admitting to it.
Well, to answer the question briefly, it is ISIS is what is the U.S. media and the propaganda creators from behind the media decide to create. Tomorrow or 3 months from now, we will start hearing another name that we've never heard of. And within a month, they can make that the world's greatest or the most dangerous threat. And again, that is the main concept here. And I know the mainstream media, US media, the Western media, they have been playing it as such, but they did exactly the same thing with Al-Qaeda. I mean, Al-Qaeda was 100 people or 100,000 people or 10 million people. Another interesting perspective in this is that I refer to the brand change, and sometimes you have to switch the brand for the marketing purposes. And ISIS, as you can look at and see from the term, from the name now, the brand created, the Western powers have gotten closer to just name and link the entire global terrorism to Islam. And that's another marketing strategy by the United States, NATO, and the main Western countries.
What we hear from the media is that President Obama blamed the chaos of the Syrian civil war for the rise of ISIS. At the same time, you have the United States doesn't hide that it's been helping the rebels in Syria from the very beginning. Did U.S. intelligence know who they were funding?
Absolutely, as they did in the 80s with the Mujahideens in Afghanistan, as they did with various so-called Islamic terror cells within Caucasus and Central Asia, as they did with Al-Qaeda. And this is no different. As I said, you're only looking at a brand change. You're not looking at any kind of a new phenomenon as far as the U.S. global perpetual warfare is concerned.
Now, the U.S. is only ramping up support for moderate rebel groups in Syria, or so they say. So who works to determine if rebels are moderate or no? Is there really a way of knowing that?
Again, it is really difficult to talk to or talk around all these propaganda created by the Western powers through the mainstream media. And I feel like if I start even commenting on that, I'm belittling the facts on the ground. And again, I want to go back and provide the context and say, look, Mujahideens, which later became aka Al-Qaeda's, they were the freedom fighters. And we have had similar situation in the Balkans during the war. You know, you had people that were, or the factions that were considered, you know, fanatics or criminal or terrorists, whether it was KLA, and then they became freedom fighters, they became our allies. And again, you're looking exactly at the same thing, different brand, but you're looking exactly at the same phenomenon. And we can talk around this and bring in all the different characterization put forward by the Western media, and then we can put it and compare it, what has been happening in the past 30, 35 years, and we'll see that the marketing strategy is the same, it's just a brand difference.
What we're seeing right now is that U.S.-led airstrikes in Syria aren't stopping ISIS, well, at least not yet, and the Kurdish fighters on the ground are asking for ground support. Will the U.S. be sending troops to fight ISIS on the ground? What do you think?
Again, that's going to depend on various factors on what's going to happen. And again, I'm going to go back to context and history. The Kurdish factions and the Kurdish factor has always been used and played. The Kurdish faction and the Kurdish factor was the case when we had the war with Iraq. You know, we had the northern territory and the Kurdish area. Then we always get to, okay, what's going to be Turkey's role? Are they going to be wary of what's going to happen afterwards? If this happens with us and the Kurds, and again, you're looking at the exact, the same replicate of what we had in place, what was taking place during the initial stage of war against Iraq.
Right now, the U.S. military actions in Iraq have one set of objectives, and then in Syria another. For example, Kurds in Iraq received so much aid so quickly from the United States, unlike the Kurds in Syria. What is it, like two kind of brands of Kurds, like you say? Is it wise to assume two different strategies when fighting one enemy?
Absolutely. You have the Kurds in Iran, and you're looking at a totally different characteristics and where they stand within the, there are over 25, 30 million Kurds, okay? And the Kurds in Syria, you have the Kurds in Turkey, you have the Kurds in Iraq, you have the Kurds in Iran. And right now, the game and the play being centered around the stage in Syria. So we are looking at a different mechanism there than when we are looking at what's happening with the northern Iraq. And also you have to look at the oil factor, okay? What do we have in Syria where the Kurds are concentrated versus what we have in northern Iraq, places such as Kirkuk? And well, do we have the oil factor in play there or we don't have it there? So if you start putting those kinds of information that comes with each region and the different sects versus, let's say, in this case, Kurds, and you're looking at several different factors in play. You're not looking at only one. So you're not looking at Kurdish faction, and here are the Kurds, and trying to basically put them all in the same bucket. It all depends on the geostrategic facts and what you're facing, what we have, what is in play, what is at stake. And then again, you can never compare northern Iraq with what's happening with Syria and the Kurdish region in Syria.
Yeah, because I was thinking maybe they're not helping the Kurds in Syria because they're affiliated with the Kurds in Turkey, and America maybe doesn't want to upset Turkey being one of its greatest allies. No?
No, not really, because you had exactly the same scenario with the Kurds in northern Iraq and the Kurds inside Turkey. And if you look at the border region and the cross-border activities between the Kurds in Iraq and in Kurds in Turkey, we had exactly the same situation. And this was one of the main reasons that Turkey did not want to allow the United States using its air base during the early stage of the war against Iraq. It was about the Kurds in northern Iraq and how that would upset the equilibrium that the Turkish government wants to preserve and keep in place as far as the Kurdish faction is concerned.
Now, the former CIA chief and ex-defense secretary Leon Panetta said the U.S. is looking at least 30-year war against ISIS, which is not at all what the White House is telling the public. Is he exaggerating?
Well, I would say it's a very short period. I'm really surprised because we just talked about the brand change. The war against Al-Qaeda was declared as a forever war, and it has been expanding. I mean, the war against Al-Qaeda started when it was supposed to be in Afghanistan, and we started chasing Al-Qaeda in Yemen and Pakistan with all the drone attacks, Al-Qaeda in Iraq. And the fact that this was going to be a forever war, and now that the brand has changed to ISIS, I'm very surprised that former CIA director is stamping it with such a short time period. I believe 30-year period is very short, unless they have already implanted other sects or the other factions that they are going to declare the world's most dangerous terrorist. I would say it's a very short period of time. We currently are more interested in an ongoing, never-ending perpetual war. So I would say if you compare it with what we have been characterizing or our government and the media, Al-Qaeda, I would say I'm surprised that he has put such a short time stamp on ISIS, considering the attraction or the attractiveness of the brand, because it has the word Islam built into it. And let's just forget Al-Qaeda. I mean, Al-Qaeda was just the noun, you know, the name. And in this case, you're looking at a far-reaching implications when you declare the current greatest threat with an organization that has the word Islam built into it. And I think it's much more attractive to be used. So I would say, yeah, it should be forever. I'm surprised it's 30 years.
Now, U.S. Vice President Joe Biden blamed Saudi Arabia, the United Arab Emirates, and Turkey for helping extremists in Syria. But then he later apologized for his comments. But was he right?
Okay, so rather than dignify people like Biden, let's talk about, again, context and history. My website, our news organization, was the first one to really break within the United States the training of the Syrian rebels in Turkey. And this was about 6 to 9 months before anything about Syria actually made it into the news. And using U.S. airbase, and this is in southern Turkey, close to the border with the Syria, and this was NATO and the United States factions training and arming and sending them back, having them cross the border, rebels, long before actually it became news, Syria. And again, as I said, this was done in Turkey by the NATO's forces, mainly US and British forces. And it was something that was planned and designed and implemented by the United States. So for Joe Biden to come and right now, you know, putting this out, of course, he will get away with it because the mainstream media here, they're not going to go and revisit the facts that were exposed with the activities of U.S., what they did in Turkey, training these factions. I mean, now it's called ISIS. It's like French fries or the freedom fries. You're looking exactly the same fries at the same price. So that's all I'm going to say. It is just ludicrous. And then he took it back because it upset the current president in Turkey, Erdogan. And I wouldn't even find it really newsworthy, but it's funny.
Well, why is it more important for Sunni countries like Qatar or Turkey to bring down President Assad than to contain extremism? Because you have Saudis and Qataris helping the anti-Assad rebels and the Turks asking Kurds to turn against Assad before they get any help with ISIS. Why?
In reality, if you're looking at the factual, objective analysis of it, really, it's not to their advantage whatsoever. I mean, you just name the countries. For example, Turkey is a member of NATO, and Turkey is greatly managed and directed by the United States, has been for several decades. There's no question about that. And when you're looking at United Emirates and the countries within the region, you know, including Saudi Arabia, you're looking at the tentacles of the United States. I call them the tentacle nations. So if you start looking at saying, what is their advantage? Of course, there are no advantages, and you only look at disadvantages. If you start polling people within these countries, and I can speak to Turkey, for example, if you start getting the opinion polls in Turkey, you will see that over 90% of people in Turkey are against such moves. And Turkey had a pretty good relationship with Assad and with Syria. I know they engage in some really good level of commerce, and there has been zero advantage. They have to implement policies created, designed, and issued by the United States, by NATO, and that's what they are doing. So to answer your question, it has never been a question of any other nations, especially in the region, their interests or their advantages or even comparative advantages. It has always been about what is designed, what is put in place, what orders are issued here in the United States, and that's the end of it. And the other people's interest, the other nation's interest, is not even in the equation. It's never been. And if you ask the populace, people in those nations, they would actually nod and they would say, yes, that's exactly what they believe because that's the reality.
All right, here's another possible and interesting turn of events. FBI Chief Mike Comey warned terrorists are working on an effort to attack the United States very, very soon. Is the U.S. ready to respond?
Well, again, we have to look at different things and say why this statement was made. Is it based on some sort of facts and real solid intelligence gathered? Or is it the fact that, for example, we have had for the TSA and for the flights, you know, the threat level has been really low. And when that goes for a long time, people, they get antsy. They say, well, you know, this is really annoying to have all these screens out there and going through them. We haven't had any terrorist threats, really. The level has not been blinking red or even orange, just been yellow. Let's go through the rainbow colors. So it's time to re-energize the Americans with the fear of terrorism. We need to have more expenditure for things to put in place because we can go ahead and increase the threat level within the airports. Let me give you an example. If you look at the stock market and look at the stock prices for all the military industrial complex related companies and firms, you will see how they have just gone up tremendously since the brand from Al-Qaeda switched to ISIS. And this is, again, the brand change I'm referring to. This is when you say, yes, now we can go ahead and produce and sell more to the government and spend billions more. So the same thing is true for the internal security, fear-mongering factors on the ground in the United States. It's time to re-energize that fear, and that's exactly what they are doing. And what's going to follow this is going to be more measures put in place, whether it's within the airports or whether it's the hiring within the FBI or increasing the number of informants. Those are the things that are going to follow this announcement. We have to have more expenditure because of the fear level is going to go up, and therefore those expenditures are going to be justified. And it's as simple as that.
The FBI also says that dozens of Americans are believed to be fighting in Syria with rebel groups. How did that happen?
Well, it has to happen. Even if it's not the case, it has to happen because you're looking at how ordinary Americans perceive these things. Well, think about it. Syria and this area, you know, that region in Iraq, they are thousands of miles away. What can they do to us from there? So it's not enough to raise the terror threat and really do some heavy duty fear mongering. But if you bring some U.S. elements and ties in there, if we have Americans who are there, who are going to come back here and they're going to start be our boogeyman here on the ground and they're going to blow up buildings, that's going to be marketing-wise more attractive. So it's going to be easier to sell to the American public the notion of our war against ISIS. We're not going to hear much of Al-Qaeda for a while. So Al-Qaeda is going to disappear and exit the stage, replaced by ISIS. So yes, that's another marketing strategy. If you start looking at some of what has been happening and what is being put forth by these people, including the former CIA director and the US media, and if you start looking at it from the marketing perspective, we get to find more answers and understand what's going on rather than trying to approach this through some logical, political, philosophical, or even sociological analysis. And I think the best model that fits what's happening right now and explains it is the marketing model. And we should look at it as such.
Twitter is suing the FBI because it is not allowed to tell the public when the government asks for surveillance help. Why is surveilling Twitter such a big deal for US government? So much really depend on Twitter and other social media?
No. Why surveilling all the Americans through NSA with their phone, every single phone conversation is such an important thing for the government? And again, I'm going to take us back and say, what kind of reaction from the public does this create? I mean, when we hear every day of how much is being gathered from the Facebook, it's true, and what's being gathered and collected and how people are being monitored through their Twitters, combined with what we have already known since 2004, 2005, the expose on NSA, you have a better chance of controlling the majority, controlling the people.
Sybil, can the FBI, CIA, NSA control their information, prevent it from gaining public attention? Like, what can prevent people like you, for instance, or Ed Snowden from speaking out?
Nothing. Nothing prevents people from speaking out. I have been speaking out. I don't think the U.S. government is really bothered. If the United States government is really bothered by people who are speaking out, people like myself or some credible real whistleblowers, and if that becomes a real threat, it's very easy for them to take out those people, to eliminate them. But they are not, because it hasn't risen to that level yet. If the reach were such, and if the consequences of people speaking out really reach the real masses and brought out, you know, some reaction, then you will be looking at a totally different scenario or the reaction or action by the U.S. government. But we haven't seen it yet.
And again, that was Sybil Edmonds, author, journalist, and former FBI translator and whistleblower, on the show Sophie and Company on RT. This interview was done before Russia started bombing ISIS, at the request of the Syrian government. Are these two former FBI employees really, quote, horrifying trolls, as the NPR pundits have labeled them, because they question the official explanation of events? I think you're smart enough to decide that for yourselves and not have to be labeled, quote, horrifying troll by uninformed talk show hosts at NPR for questioning your government and the controlled media. In fact, these questioning citizens may be the only hope we have of ending the global war on terror and all of the other destructive things happening to our fragile planet and its people, inflicted on us all by the elite, for profit, and the New World Order. Sybil Edmonds has a radio show and a podcast which can be found at the website boilingfrogspost.com. And again, that's boilingfrogspost.com. I encourage you to check her website out. She's got a wealth of knowledge about 9/11 and geopolitics. This concludes this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Thanks for listening.
Power to the people.